Chapter 5. That afternoon they bought a tent from a disillusioned hopeful who had thrown up his job on the Natal railways to make the pilgrimage to Witwatersrand, and now needed money to get home. They pitched it near the hotel and went down to the Natal Spruit to take a long overdue bath. That night they held a mild celebration on the half bottle of brandy that Duff produced from his saddlebag, and the next morning Candy took them out to the claims. She had 20 of them pegged right along the banquet. She led them to a spot where the reef outcropped.
"I'll leave you two to look around. If you're interested, we can talk about it when you come to the hotel. I've got to get back now. There'll be hungry mouths to feed."
Duff escorted Candy to her horse, giving her his arm across the rough ground and helping her into the saddle in a manner he must have learnt from his father. He watched her ride away, then came back to Sean. He was elated.
"Tread lightly, Mr. Courtney. Walk with reverence, for beneath your feet lies our fortune."
They went over the ground, Sean like a friendly bloodhound, and Duff cruising with the restless circling of a tiger shark. They inspected the claim notices, paced out the boundaries, and filled their pockets with chips of rock. Then they rode back to their tent, and Duff brought out his pestle, mortar, and pan. They took them down to the bank of the Natal Spruit, and all afternoon crushed the rock and worked the pan. When they had tested the last sample, Duff gave his judgment.
"Well, there's gold, and I'd say it's payable gold. It's not nearly as rich as the one we panned at Dundee, but that must have been a selected piece of the Leader Reef."
He paused and looked seriously at Sean. "I think it's worth a try. If the Leader Reef is there, we'll find it, and in the meantime we won't lose money by working the main reef." Sean picked up a pebble and tossed it into the stream in front of him. He was learning for the first time the alternate thrill and depression of gold sickness, when one minute you rode the lightning and the next you dropped abruptly into the depths. The yellow tails in the pan had looked pathetically thin and undernourished to him.
"Supposing you're right, and supposing we talk Candy into selling her claims, how do we go about it? That four-stamp mill looked a devilishly complicated and expensive bit of machinery to me, not the kind of thing you can buy over the counter in every general dealer's store."
Duff punched his shoulder and smiled lopsidedly at him.
"You've got your old Uncle Duff looking after you. Candy will sell her claims. She trembles when I touch her. A day or two more and she'll be eating out of my hand. As for the mill, when I came out to this country, I fell in with a rich Cape farmer whose lifelong ambition had been to have his own gold mine. He selected a ridge which, in his undisputed wisdom as a grower of grapes, he considered to be an ideal place for his mine. He hired me to run it for him, purchased a mill of the latest and most expensive vintage, and prepared himself to flood the market with gold. After 6 months, when we had processed vast quantities of assorted quartz, chits, and earth, and recovered sufficient gold to fit into a mouse's ear without touching the sides, my patron's enthusiasm was somewhat dampened, and he dispensed with my invaluable services and closed the circus down. I left for the diamond fields, and as far as I know, the machinery is still lying there, waiting for the first buyer with a couple of £100 to come and pick it up."
Duff stood up, and they walked back towards the tent. "However, first things first. Do you agree that I should continue the negotiations with Mrs. Rottenbach?"
"I suppose so." Sean was feeling more cheerful again. "But are you sure your interest in Mrs. Rottenbach is strictly line of duty?"
Duff was shocked.
"Don't think for a minute that my intentions are anything but to further the interests of our partnership." You can't believe that my animal appetite plays any part in what I intend doing.
No, of course not, Sean assured him. I hope you can force yourself to go through with it.
Duff laughed. While we're on the subject, I think this is as good a time as any for you to develop a stomach ailment and retire to your lonely bed. From now on, until we've got the agreement signed, your boy's charm will be of no great value in the proceedings. I'll tell Candy that you've given me authority to act on your behalf.
Duff combed his curls, put on the clothes that Emby Janey had washed for him, and disappeared in the direction of Candy's hotel. Time passed slowly for Sean. He sat and chatted with Emby Janey, drank a little coffee, and when the sun went down retired to his tent. He read one of Duff's books by the light of the hurricane lamp, but couldn't concentrate on it. His mind kept straying to thoughts of blonde hair. When someone scratched on the canvas door, he leapt up with a confused hope that Candy had decided to come and deal with him direct. It was the coloured girl from the hotel, her crinkly black hair at odds with what he had been thinking.
"Madam says she's sorry to hear about your sickness, and to tell you to have 2 spoons of this," she told him, and offered Sean the bottle of castor oil.
"Tell your mistress thank you very much." Sean accepted the medicine and started to close the tent flap again.
"Madam told me to stay and make sure that you took 2 full spoons. I have to take the bottle back and show her how much you've had."
Sean's stomach cringed. He looked at the coloured girl standing resolute in the doorway, determined to carry out her instructions. He thought of poor Duff doing his duty like a man. He could do no less. He swallowed down the thick, clinging oil with his eyes closed, then went back to the book. He slept uneasily, starting up occasionally to look at the empty bed across the tent. The medicine drove him out into the cold at 2:30 in the morning. Emby Janey was curled up next to the fire, and Sean scowled at him. His regular, contented snoring seemed a calculated mockery. A jackal yelped miserably up on the ridge, expressing Sean's feelings exactly, and the night wind fanned his bare buttocks. Duff came home in the dawning. Sean was wide awake.
"Well, what happened?" he demanded.
Duff yawned.
"At one stage I began to doubt whether I was man enough. However, it worked out to the satisfaction of all concerned. What a woman!"
He pulled off his shirt, and Sean saw the scratches across his back.
"Did she give you any castor oil?" Sean asked bitterly.
"I'm sorry about that," Duff smiled at him sympathetically. "I tried to dissuade her, truly I did. She's a very motherly person, most concerned about your stomach."
"You still haven't answered my question. Did you make any progress with the claims?"
"Oh, that!"
Duff pulled the blankets up under his chin.
"We disposed of that early on in the proceedings. She took a down payment of £10 each on them and gave us an option to buy the lot at any time during the next 2 years for £10,000. We arranged that over dinner. The rest of the time was devoted, in a manner of speaking, to shaking hands over the deal. Tomorrow afternoon, or rather this afternoon, you and I'll ride across to Pretoria and get a lawyer to write up an agreement for her to sign. But right now I need some sleep. Wake me at lunchtime. Good night, laddie."
Duff and Sean brought the agreement back from Pretoria the following evening. It was an impressive 4-page document, full of "in so much as" and "party of the first part." Candy led them to her bedroom, and they sat around anxiously while she read it through twice. She looked up at last and said,
"That seems all right. But there is just one other thing."
Sean's heart sank, and even Duff's smile was strained. It had all been too easy so far. Candy hesitated, and Sean saw with faint surprise that she was blushing. It was a pleasant thing to see the peach of her cheeks turning to ripe apple, and they watched it with interest, their tension lessening perceptibly. "I want the mine named after me," they nearly shouted with relief. "An excellent idea. How about the Rottenbach Reef Mine?" Candy shook her head. "I'd rather not be reminded of him. We'll leave him out of it." "Very well, let's call it the Candy Deep. A little premature, I suppose, as we're still at ground level, but pessimism never pays," suggested Duff. "Yes, that's lovely," Candy enthused, flushing again, but this time with pleasure. She scrawled her name across the bottom of the document, while Sean fired out the cork of the champagne which Duff had bought in Pretoria. They clinked glasses, and Duff gave the toast, "To Candy and the Candy Deep. May one grow sweeter and the other deeper with each passing day."